for a little ride.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics, or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted, and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
That's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com. He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to pray for a financial miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems. The biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need. How prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues. How to pray for a financial miracle. An Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com. How to pray for a financial miracle. Available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the broadcast. We are live here on Sunday night. It is December the 15th tonight, and we're going to be taking off a couple of weeks from doing the program live. Just full and fair disclosure, I know some programs just like to kind of trick you into thinking that they're still live. I don't know, I just don't feel good about doing that. So I'm being honest and upfront with you that the next 2 weeks we're going to take off for the holidays, and I've also freed up my schedule so that I'm not going to be teaching my internet marketing webinars and taking off some time from martial arts training, which related to the fact that on Friday night I was advanced to second degree black belt after a year of training to get to this point, and lots and lots of hours of training to get to where I was on Friday night. And many of you know, about 6 weeks ago, I passed the pre-test to be able to take my black belt test, and then my second degree black belt test. So Friday night was the second degree black belt test, and the good news is I made it. The slightly bad news is I'm very beat up and bruised and just physically exhausted, mentally exhausted from the whole process. But if you're my friend on Facebook, you can see a lot of the pictures. You can also see some of the videos. So if you're not a friend of mine on Facebook, you can friend me. Just go to Facebook. My name is James L. Paris over on Facebook. My full name, you'll find me that way. Or I think it's linked from the homepage of ChristianMoney.com, still my personal page. And unlike a lot of the big wigs out there, I actually let people friend me on my actual personal Facebook page, which is kind of cool, as opposed to just setting up what they call a Facebook fan page, which is not quite as intimate. There's not as much going back and forth and all of that. So you can still be my friend. I think the limit now Facebook has is 5,000 people that you can have as friends. And I think I'm up to about 1,500 or 1,600. So there's plenty of room there if you want to join me as a friend over on Facebook. We've got a great program lined up for you tonight. Our guest will be with us in a couple of moments. His name is Dan Prescher, and he is one of the writers and editors for a website called internationalliving.com. And this is going to be really, really fascinating. This is something that my wife and I have talked about for many years, the idea of possibly moving overseas. I say overseas, let me say that a different way, living abroad, because some people, in fact, most Americans, if they do expatriate, if you will, and end up moving away from the U.S., are living in Mexico, Central America, so it's not really overseas, so I guess that would be a wrong way of putting it. But here's what is fascinating about living abroad, living internationally, is that you can live, in many cases, for so much less money, and you can just live a whole, you know, different lifestyle. I mean, in many cases, you could live in an exotic location, you know, a beautiful, warm climate, maybe near the ocean, and live for a fraction, a small fraction of what it costs to live here in the United States. This is what we call geographic arbitrage. And I'm doing that in a sense in that I live in Florida, and I'm a big evangelist about people moving to Florida because we have no state income tax. It is super cheap to live here in most parts of Florida, and it's growing. So, you know, real estate is going up in value. The opportunities for jobs are here. Of course, the jobs don't pay as much as they pay up north, but in the end, I think that it's an overall better quality of life here, not only because we have really nice weather most of the year, and in my case, we live 5 minutes from the ocean. We've got a little sailboat. We own a house without a mortgage. You know, so you can really have, I think, a much better lifestyle overall. This is something my wife and I, we talk about all the time. We talk about our relatives that some live in California where it's super expensive to live, very congested, lots of problems with traffic and crime, and, you know, it's off the charts to buy a home there. Yes, the jobs pay well in many cases, but that's offset by, I think, what's a lack of quality of life and a really high cost of living there. And we know a lot of folks, we have relatives that live up in the Midwest where it's super cold, like at least 4 months out of the year. And they're facing situations like, you know, in the Chicago area, it's not uncommon to owe $8,000 to $10,000 a year just on your property taxes. That's not including having a mortgage and making a mortgage payment or any of the other expenses of living in a state where they have a state income tax on top of the federal income tax. So, you know, I think as the economy continues to get worse, that more and more people are going to be looking at this as a possibility, the idea of living in another country. And you might maybe do it for a few months just to see what the experience is like. Our guest tonight that will be with us in a few moments, he's doing this now not only as a writer, but he and his wife have lived in many different countries. And so it's very appropriate, you know, for him to be writing on this because he's done this. He's doing it right now. According to his bio, he actually lives in Mexico right now. I don't know if he's there tonight when we're going to be talking to him. I haven't asked producer Joy if we're actually going to be connecting to him in Mexico. Maybe, or maybe he's stateside right now. Who knows? 10 days until Christmas. Can you believe it? I don't know why, but every year Christmas seems to get here faster and faster. We have no Christmas decorations up at our house. We don't have a Christmas tree up. We don't have Christmas lights out in the yard. And I have neighbors that have had like their Christmas decorations up since Halloween. So I feel like a total, complete reject in my neighborhood. And there's this guy who's 4 or 5 doors down from me, and his house, his front yard looks like Disney World. So I'm almost embarrassed or ashamed to put my few lights out that I put out, but especially since this year we haven't done anything yet. And my wife, who's a school teacher, she's not off of school until the 20th. So that's, she's got to go another, you know, week here to school as a school teacher. So You know, we're looking at like a week from Wednesday is Christmas, and we haven't done anything with the decorating the house or any of that. But we have done all of our Christmas shopping. So I guess we're ahead of the eight ball as far as that goes. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of talk right now about, you know, because Thanksgiving came late this year, that there's, I guess, 1 week less of shopping time. And I'm hearing all these stories about why this is going to cost retailers millions and millions of dollars. Well, I don't know about you, but I noticed that they were already marketing Christmas and Christmas stuff back, like, even before Halloween. So I don't really know how, you know, the fact that Thanksgiving came right at the end of November this year instead of, like, what usually works out to be, like, a week, week and a half in advance of the end of the month, you know, the last Thursday of the month, so depending on how the calendar works out. But they're making a huge deal out of this fact that Thanksgiving came so late, retailers are going to be hurt, yada, yada, yada. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think people just aren't spending as much money this year, and they're just trying to find an excuse to explain it. But I think the excuse is simply that the economy is not very good for most people. We're also continuing that Ripple promotion, that Ripple XRP digital currency promotion. If you didn't get in on that, we are giving away 150 Ripple XRP, and that's going to be to every new subscriber that grabs an annual subscription to our ChristianMoneyPlus.com website. And you'll see that article that has all the details of that offer if you go over to blog.christianmoney.com. Look at the very latest blog post, blog.christianmoney.com. A lot of you know we've been talking about Bitcoin for quite a while, and Bitcoin has gone through the roof, and we got in when it was 12 bucks. Now we're getting into this Ripple XRP. It's 4.5 cents right now. And so if you want to learn more about this digital currency and what we think about it and why many people think it could be the very next Bitcoin, check out my blog, blog.christianmoney.com. Go to the left-hand sidebar and then look down and you'll see the very most recent blog post that's all about Ripple XRP digital currency. And then we get into the offer where we're giving away 150 Ripple XRP. It's not a lot of money, really. I mean, what is it, $6 or $7? But we went out and bought, I don't know what we've got, we bought like 20,000 Ripple XRP, and we're just giving them away to people that are joining us as subscribers. So we can do this for, I think, 50 more people based on how much digital currency that we right now have in our account. So all that being said, check it out at blog.christianmoney.com. All right, well, I'm told that our guest is ready, and he's with us, and I'm double-checking with producer Joy, who I hope is listening. Joy, you have your name under the guest's phone number and his name under your phone number in my control screen. So that's throwing me a little bit, but I'm just going to trust that. There we go. Now she's fixing it. I guess she is listening. Our guest tonight is Dan Prescher, and Dan is a writer and editor with InternationalLiving.com. And Dan, so good to have you with us tonight. I've got to start by asking you where in the world you are.
Right now, James, I'm at home in Cotacachi, Ecuador, up in the Andes at about 8,000 feet.
Wow, it is so cool to talk to you because I love internationalliving.com, the website.
And, oh, thank you.
You didn't hear any of the introduction, but I'll sort of give you the Reader's Digest version of it. My wife and I, we've talked about the idea of living abroad for years, but we're both very adventurous people. My wife is a school teacher. She teaches music, she teaches dance, and she teaches drama. She's triple certified in all three of those arts and also has a master's degree. And I'm sort of like an internet business guy. I do everything from podcasting to writing. All of my business is done over the internet, so I could live anywhere. And so we're sort of doing right now, living in Florida, is kind of part – we call this like kind of our halfway step because Florida's
right.
A really cheap place to live. You know, our friends that live like in the Midwest and their property taxes are $10,000 a year, and they're like commuting in the snow, and they're living this life that is like hell on earth, but they just claim they have no options. This is all I can do. You know, if I leave here, I won't have a job. I won't have a place to live. You know, everything is boxed in, and we're thinking, man, think outside the box a little bit. Look at the possibilities. There's a whole world out there. And I use the term a lot, geographic arbitrage, which is if you can live somewhere where it's kind of like fairly inexpensive to live, but you can still make a pretty good income. It's like in the net ledger of everything, when you look at the bottom line, you just have a better life. And just sort of start with that as a thought. Is that really the thought behind this idea of living internationally, is to just kind of work the numbers to your advantage to have a better life?
You have summed it up pretty well, James. It's you hit the three main points. You need to be a little adventurous, and you need to have a tolerance for novelty, because it's not like the United States. When you move outside the United States, things are a little different, and you either have to enjoy that or have a tolerance for it. And you spoke about the locational arbitrage angle. If you could move someplace and instantly lower your cost of living by half or more, that's huge value on the plus side of your ledger, no matter how you put it. And, of course, you mentioned having a portable career. If you have a career or an interest that you can do anywhere on the planet, especially through an Internet connection, and Internet is available almost everywhere now, you've got those three things working for you, and it's a powerful combination for improving your life and lowering your cost of living at the same time.
Now, one of the things that is overwhelming for us, for my wife and I, is trying to figure out where that place would be. And I know that, you know, we go down like to the bookstore, and there's like a section on international travel and that sort of thing, and it's like there's like a million books. And then when you go to a site like yours, which is great, there's so many different options. It's almost like when I take my wife out to a really nice restaurant, they have more than 20 or 30 items on the menu. I'm going to be there an hour or appetite before she can decide what we're gonna order, and she can never even decide until she knows what I'm gonna order, which I don't know what that's about, but it somehow has to do with her maybe tasting off of my plate, so she wants something different than I'm getting. But nonetheless, it's a huge menu out there, isn't it, that people have to choose from when they think about going internationally?
It really is. It's a very large world still, and there are lots and lots of potential places to settle yourself if you're seriously considered about being an expat. That's why we always advise people to start out by ruthlessly profiling yourself. And I mean honestly taking a look at the things you can and can't do without. Because like I said, when you move outside of the United States, whatever else you think of the United States, it is probably the most convenient country on the planet. You can get almost anything you want, anytime you want, anywhere you are with a phone call or the click of a mouse button. And a lot of the world is not like that.
So
and
you don't get a can't pizza live in 30 minutes, Dan? You can't get a pizza there in 30 minutes and an Amazon two-day Prime delivery of any product?
Exactly. There are great workarounds, and part of the challenge of living offshore is figuring out those things that you really, really miss and cobble them together for yourself. I mean, we can make perfectly serviceable ranch dressing out here. We found a substitute for Triscuits. We can make our own half and half for our coffee. And there are places you can go where you don't.
Dan, of all the things I thought you would mention that when you were roughing it out there, one was not Triscuits. But go ahead, continue on, sir.
I have to admit, we really don't do without much. And these days, I guess you could pick a place to go where you would be living out in the bush and wouldn't have any modern conveniences. But in the 13 years that Susan and I have lived offshore, we've always been very comfortable and have never felt that we were making a huge trade-off in comfort or convenience. You just have to adjust a little bit.
Now, one of the big questions I'm sure that people have is, you know, and this is my nightmare, that I would end up in like a prison in Ecuador, like being fed dog food, because I would, you know, not pay a bill properly leaving a restaurant, or someone would plant drugs in my backpack and all of a sudden I would be like doing hard time with someone with no teeth in my cell with me. What are the risks legally of doing something like this?
We have found the risks almost minimal, but you can't ignore doing your due diligence about the laws of a country and respecting those laws, and just doing the basic research, finding out what is legal and what is not legal in the country that you want to go to. I mean, we do run into expats who leave the United States because of what they feel are unjust restrictions in law, without even considering that the law may be even more restrictive in the country that they're going to. It just takes some front-end research, and I tell you, we've lived in three places in Mexico, in Nicaragua, in Panama, and now in Ecuador, and we have never felt unsafe. We've never felt like we were being taken advantage of, but we practice the same precautions that we would practice anywhere in the States.
Well, let me hit you with sort of the test case, your nightmare comes true. My wife and I, we had been talking about a lot of different locations, and we started reading about Belize. We even bought a book about Belize, and I bought a couple of ebooks on what it takes to get approved to live there and all that. And then the whole John McAfee story comes out where he's accused of all this horrible stuff, and somehow he gets out of the country, and now he's making the rounds on all the different talk shows talking about how they were blackmailing him for millions of dollars, and because he wouldn't continue to give them money, they trumped up a bunch of charges against him, and he had to sort of get out while he could with his head without going to prison for life or being killed over there. And I know that many of the expat websites, et cetera, have sort of looked at Belize as a great option. Does this change anything as far as you're concerned for Belize, or just the whole concept in general of living abroad, with this one example of what happened with McAfee?
Not really. You can find examples like that. The Internet has changed everything. I mean, anybody can sit down and research any place instantly, and stories like this happen in every country on the planet, including the United States. If somebody in Belize wanted to move to the United States and move to the United States and maybe read the Edward Snowden story and figured, well, I don't know, it sounds kind of dicey, but Belize has been a natural choice for a lot of expats because English is the national language. It used to be a British colony. Their currency is pegged 2-to-1 to the U.S. dollar, so it's a very easy place to get started, and it's beautiful. But I have to be honest with you. I don't know many people who have had the McAfee kind of experience because most of the expats I know are just kind of like me, living life, keeping their heads down, not moving with the hucky mucks, and maybe putting themselves in a position to be blackmailed like that. Nobody will want to blackmail me. It's not worth their while.
Right, exactly.
I don't have enough to be blackmailed for.
Now, if you know, and we're gonna take calls tonight and all of that, and we're also gonna give you plenty of time to tell people about internationalliving.com and if they want to subscribe. And there's also a magazine, too. Isn't that right? Or is it just the website?
It is the magazine. It actually started as a newsletter 33 years ago. Now it's a 48-page full-color publication. And most of that information is on the website as well. So you can get the magazine in PDF format, too, if you want.
Okay, very good. So if we were to boil it down, and I know that I can only imagine, I'm a financial guy, so people will say things to me like, what's the best stock to buy? And I'll be like, bad question. There is no best stock. So you might hit me with that same reply. But if you had to pick, like, let's say three places that are pretty darn similar to the U.S. in a lot of ways and might be easy for people to adapt to that are great values in terms of you know, stretching the dollar, where would those two or three places be?
Well, Panama and Costa Rica come up almost immediately. Panama has had North Americans in it for 100 years now because of the Panama Canal, and they're on the U.S. dollar. So especially in Panama City, things are done in a very kind of North American way. It's not like they're not Panamanian, but it's very easy to get used to and settle into. Costa Rica as well. North Americans have been going to Costa Rica for years now, decades, and they're very used to North Americans there, and North Americans can find a lot of what makes them comfortable and what they need there. The other place that I would mention, oddly enough, is Mexico. And Mexico gets a bad rap in the news cycle in the United States because there is a terrible drug war going on in certain places. But 80% of the country is clean and safe, and Mexico still has probably more U.S. expats living there full-time than any other country on the planet.
And I know there's an area, I'm Googling it right now, Doc Severinsen, who I had a chance to go backstage and talk to him, the trumpet player from The Tonight Show. He actually lives in San Miguel. And not only was he there, but John Davidson, a bunch of other sort of, anymore no one would know who they are, kids today, but, you know, sort of celebrities from the past. And he had shared, look, his money goes like 10 times as far there. And I think there's certain like estate tax advantages of him being able to pass his wealth on to his family by moving there as opposed to being out in California. So in terms of Mexico, one, you know, I would think of it, I think most people would think of Mexico as one country. So if there's something horrible going on there, you sort of think it's everywhere. But is it the same, like, is it like the same in the United States? Like, I live in a small town called Palm Coast, Florida. And really, like, if someone steals a pie from a bakery, it's on the front page of the news. We don't really have a lot of serious crime here. But somebody might say, oh, well, the United States is all like the south side of Chicago, where there's 60 or 70 people killed a weekend. Is that a fair comparison, or is Mexico really dangerous in many ways that the U.S. is not?
No, that's a very fair comparison, James. Susan and I lived in San Miguel de Allende for 2 years when we first moved to Mexico. We've also lived in a little town south of Guadalajara called Ajijic, which is very popular with expats. And most recently, we spent 2 years remodeling a townhome in Merida, Mexico, which is the capital of the Yucatan. And each one of those places we would happily live in again, never felt threatened. Like I said, Mexico has the dubious distinction of being right next door to the biggest market for illegal drugs on the planet, the United States. So that's just a market condition that they have to live with. Most of the country is remarkably safe, remarkably friendly, and one of my big criteria is you never have to shovel snow again, which I'm sure is probably one of the reasons you're in Florida as well.
Absolutely. I grew up in Chicago, 18 years of shoveling snow. And as soon as I could leave, I was gone. And I visit, but, you know, typically only in the summers if it can be worked out, unless it's a funeral or something. I'll travel and brave the snow if I have to. But we're going to do this. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break here, but I want to tell our audience that they can call in now. If you're someone listening and you've thought about it, you've thought about living outside of the United States and you just don't know where to get started, this is the guy to talk to, Dan Pressure. He's with International Living Magazine. The website is internationalliving.com. And this is a really, really great topic for you to explore. Maybe it's something to think about this year. And we'll get into after the break, you know, what some of the steps might be to you. For example, folks, would you go there and visit first for a few weeks before you decided to move there? We're going to get into all of that after the break. And, Dan, this break is like 4 minutes long, so you're going to have a chance here to get a fresh cup of coffee or whatever you're drinking and take a little break. But we're going to take calls right now after the break. You can right now call in, though, and Joy will get you set up. Actually, producer Faith will get you in the queue. 888-287-3316 is the number to call if you have a question about living abroad, moving internationally. 888-287-3316. That's 888-287-3316. We take the phone calls first, and then we will go to email questions. So if you want to send your question by email, you can do that. But as you know, we don't always get to all the email questions every week because we will run out of time. So if you want to be sure to get your question answered, give us a call right now, 888-287-3316. We're going to take this break. This is about 4 minutes, and we'll be back with our guest, Dan Prescher from internationalliving.com. Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. Recently, I did an event in Chicago unveiling a brand new service called Christian Money Plus. It's been years in the making, and I'm super excited to let you know that it is now available. At the centerpiece of this new program is the ability for you to have unlimited access to me personally using the internet. You'll also receive my 12-page newsletter mailed to your home each and every month. Now, there are tons of other benefits, such as our suite of financial calculators, model portfolios, and much, much more. Right now, I'm offering several bonuses to our new subscribers. Some of these bonuses include a video on how to use the internet to raise money for your idea or project. This is money you will never have to pay back. There's also a second video on how to save money by dropping cable TV, and I also cover on this video how to get free home phone service for life. Yes, you can drop cable TV and still get hundreds of channels on your television set legally using the internet. All of that, including how to get the free home phone service for life, all of that on your second bonus video. Additional bonus reports include how to opt out of Obamacare, as I did, and save thousands by joining what's called Christian Medical Sharing. Another bonus report shows you step-by-step how to stop Google from spying on you. All of this information is available right now to subscribers of our brand new service, Christian Money Plus. I sure hope you'll consider joining us. All of the money that comes in every month from Christian Money Plus goes to further the mission of our website, christianmoney.com. Check it out today. That's christianmoneyplus.com. Again, that's christianmoneyplus.com. You can subscribe right now and access all of these bonus reports within a matter of just a few seconds. Check it out right now. That's christianmoneyplus.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems, the biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need, how prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues, How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You know, about a year ago, I started getting concerned about the cost of our family's health insurance, literally costing us thousands and thousands of dollars each year, and the cost continued to go up and up and up. And I started doing some research into an alternative called Christian Medical Sharing. And I learned that through a special law, a special provision, Christians are able to opt out of Obamacare and actually get into this alternative to traditional health insurance called Christian Medical Sharing. I decided to go ahead and move into a plan like that, and I'm saving a lot of money. Now, if you'd like to find out more about it, get more of the details to find out if it's for you or not, I've written an article on it. In the article, I give you more details, including I actually mention the organization that I decided to go with. If you'd like to get all of the information on this and find out if it might be for you, check out this website, medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. That's medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. Okay, we are back. My name is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Live. And my guest tonight with us, live from Ecuador, his name is Dan Prescher, and he's in Ecuador because the guy lives all over the world, and he's a writer for InternationalLiving.com, and he's someone who's doing something that I've only really talked about and dreamed about, the idea of being an American but actually living in another country and really improving your life. I mean, look at it. I mean, I'm going to be 50 here next year, so I'm starting to think about maybe I've got 20 good years left, and do I want to spend them here in the U.S. or go somewhere where maybe my money will go a lot further and I'll have a better overall quality of life. Some people do this while they're still working, folks. Some people will do this as a retirement. They'll say, well, I'm going to retire, and instead of retiring in Naples, Florida, where a house is $1 million, I'm going to go where I can buy a house for maybe $40,000 or $50,000 that's just as nice, and my money will go twice as far. So it's a really interesting idea, and we're opening it up right now for phone calls and email questions, 888-287-3316. For questions by phone, 888-287-3316, or your questions by email, jim@christianmoney.com. All right, Dan, let's go to the phone lines here. And our first caller is our regular faithful caller, and there she is, Joanne from Minneapolis, St. Paul. Joanne, say hello to Dan Prescher in Ecuador.
Hi. Yeah, on this subject, I have several questions.
You could ask two. I'll let you have two there because you're our faithful caller, okay. So we'll let you have two of them.
All right. Okay. I was wondering if you could comment on health care and on taxes. Health care and like property taxes, whatever, you know.
Okay. Good question.
Is that an issue?
Sure.
Thanks.
Healthcare has been, as you know, since the advent of Obamacare, healthcare has been a huge issue for people in the United States. Nobody really knows what healthcare is going to look like in the future. And a lot of the people that we know who are expatriating, moving to other countries, are taking advantage of the healthcare in those countries. Costa Rica has a national healthcare system that costs between $60 and $70 a month to enter into. Here in Ecuador, healthcare is extremely cheap, and it's the equal of U.S. healthcare if you're in the major cities. You have to do kind of a cost-benefit analysis because in most of the world outside the United States, the closer you are to a major metropolitan area, the better the healthcare is. But I have to estimate that you can get comparable healthcare throughout Latin America, which is I'm familiar with, for half to a third of the cost in the United States.
Do you buy a health insurance plan if you live in those countries, or do you just pay out of pocket?
It varies from country to country. For the first couple of years that Susan and I were outside the United States, we simply paid out of pocket because the costs for procedures were so ridiculously low compared to the United States. Because Susan and I travel so much, we now have an international plan that costs us about a third of what it costs to self-insure in the United States. We're self-employed, so we provide our own insurance. We know people who do both. They buy national insurance policies, which are available in every Latin American country we know of, or they join the National Health Service of that particular country after they become a resident, or they pay out of pocket, or they combine those to meet their own needs. So that's one of the major reasons we see people moving out of the United States for economic reasons.
Go ahead on the taxes. Well, I want to mention, though, to you, throw this in here. I don't know if you know this, but we have been sort of a fan of something called Christian Medical Sharing, which is limited to just folks that are Christians, but our program is really marketed to that audience. But that type of coverage works worldwide, the Christian Medical Sharing. Even though you buy it from someone here in the U.S., they'll pay your claims anywhere in the whole world, which I think is really unique. But that's just an aside to throw that out to you. Maybe you guys will do an article on that at some point. But, talk about taxes, because are we overtaxed here in the U.S. compared to these other countries?
It seems like it to me, because taxes seem to be kind of ridiculously low outside the United States. I'll give you an example. the housing market, when it crashed in the United States, it was possible to buy nice properties in many places in the United States almost as cheaply as you could get them in Panama or in Ecuador or in Uruguay. And for a while, Susan and I were tempted to, you know, get a property in the United States. They're ridiculously cheap. Then we started doing the research on property taxes, on utilities, on insurance, on the overhead that it costs to operate a home in the United States, and we just can't make the numbers come out. I paid $52 last year for property tax on the condo that I own here in Cotacachi. $52 for the entire year.
Wait a minute.
I don't have to buy insurance if I don't want to. Yeah.
Did you just say $52 for the entire year? You didn't say $5,200. You just said $52.
That's correct.
And how much
Susan and I estimate we can live out here for about $1,500 a month, and that's all in. That's utilities, food costs, our HOA fees, because we live in a little condominium complex here in Cotacachi. And I have to tell you, our utility and taxes are probably the smallest part of that monthly total.
Now, I'm not asking you to share with us your personal numbers, because that would be unfair for me to do that. But like, to get a nice condo, like the one similar to what you have, maybe not exactly your unit or whatever, but I mean, how much money is something like, do people rent or do you buy? And what are the figures on that for renting or buying something, a nice condo for maybe a small family?
It depends, Jim, completely on where you are. A place in the heart of Panama City, which is a bustling metropolis, will obviously cost more than a place up here in the Andes Mountains in northern Ecuador. But people do rent all the time. Rents around here in northern Ecuador average $150 to about $600 a month, depending on the kind of place that you want to get.
$150 a month? Did you say $150 for the whole month? $150 to $600
right.
a month?
It may not be up to U.S. standards, Jim, and I want to get that across right now. Most of the rest of the world lives a little differently than we live in the United States. The condo that I live in is beautiful. It's modern. It's fully plumbed. It has electricity, internet, obviously. I'm talking to you on my voiceover internet protocol computer phone. But it's completely made out of concrete. It's made out of concrete block, and that's what people build with in Ecuador. We're kind of comparing apples and oranges, but I would say that you can buy and rent almost anywhere in Latin America for about half what you could in the United States.
So let's use that same scenario, a small condo for maybe a retired couple or someone that maybe has one child or something like that, in generally the area where you are, if someone wanted to actually pay for that and buy that property.
Probably right now in this area, something comparable to what I have, $85,000 to $90,000.
And is there any complications with property rights being a foreigner and actually owning real estate? I know someone told me this in Mexico, that you have to set up a corporation and the corporation buys the property, some kind of really tortured process you have to go through. Maybe that's not even right, and you can correct me on that. But are there property rights issues in some of these countries as a foreigner?
There are always issues, but they're very easy to deal with, and they don't bear any resemblance to the old horror stories that are still stuck on the Internet. In Mexico, in Panama, in Belize, in Ecuador, in every place that Susan and I have lived, it's possible to buy fee simple real estate, and your rights and obligations are just the same as a local. You're subject to the same local laws, you're subject to the same local taxes, and in many places in Latin America, that purchase of real estate can help you qualify for a visa to live and stay in that country. It's called an investor's visa in some of the countries, but depending on how much you spend on your property, you can use that to qualify for a visa that lets you stay there until you actually get residency. So it's different, but it's no scarier and a lot less expensive than it is in the United States.
And I'm just amazed at the connection we have here tonight, folks. He is in Ecuador, and I'm in Florida, and it sounds like he's in the same room with me right now. I mean, and the point that we make by saying that is, you know, with the technology that we have now, this idea of living in another location is not as crazy as it used to be. And Dan, one of the things we talk a lot about is internet businesses, online businesses, that sort of thing. I know I saw an interview with you I watched today on YouTube sort of preparing, and you talked a lot about that's something that you encourage is people to have some income coming in from the internet so that when you get to your new country, you don't have to look for all of your income to come from a job there or an opportunity there.
Exactly. We call it the fund your life part of the equation. When International Living started out, we had readers who all were almost exclusively retirees trying to make fixed incomes go farther. But as the years have gone by and the internet has spread globally, we see more and more young people, working people, people with families, taking advantage of the opportunity to work from any place they care to live on the planet. And it just, the internet really, Jim, has changed everything in the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, when we first moved to Quito, Ecuador in 2001, it was our first posting for International Living, and we were amazed that we could send an instant message to somebody and, like, in a minute or two, get a message right back. And now I have Skype video conversations with my mom in South Dakota. It's amazing. It really has changed everything.
And I remember I was watching the video earlier today of you talking about your starting out in South Dakota with this whole thing, and now you're in Ecuador. It's like, wow, you know, talk about, going from one extreme to the other, South Dakota to Ecuador. But we're flooded with email questions. I don't have any more callers right now, but I'm going to give the number one more time, 888-287-3316. If you'd like to speak to our guest, Dan Prescher, 888-287-3316. And now we'll go to emails until we wait for more calls here in our final 10 minutes. Okay, Dan, somebody wants to know, is there any, like, unique opportunity for Americans? And I'm paraphrasing their email here, but they're asking, like, helping other Americans to get situated. So they're describing a scenario where they move to a country and then sort of become, like, an expert on that country to market themselves as a consultant to other Americans. Maybe they're saying maybe they sell real estate. Maybe they get involved with writing about living there or charging people a fee to help them to move into the area. Are there such things going on where an American sort of comes in, becomes a local expert, and then helps others to make the transition for some type of a consulting fee or something like that?
There certainly are, and Jim, it runs the gamut. People are helping people get their containers through the local customs broker once they get to town. There are a lot of American, Canadian, European real estate brokers on the ground here helping people find properties. Dog walkers, house sitters, people who open up restaurants that specialize in North American food, because you'd be surprised how much some meatloaf and mashed potatoes can ease your transition into a place if it's available for you. Anything that an expat might need or want, another expat is out here trying to provide that service. It's sometimes on a very small, very local scale. Sometimes it's on a larger scale, but they're out there. And again, the internet is a hugely important resource for finding those guys, because most of them have blogs, most of them have websites, and almost every expat destination has a bulletin board of some kind where you can go on and talk to other expats who actually live there. International Living has one. It's called the IL Community page. So if you have a burning question, you can get on the internet and just ask it and get an answer.
Somebody's asking here about education and children. If they move to a foreign country, will their child's education be recognized if the child wants to graduate from high school and come back to the U.S. to go to college? Will they be accepted into college?
Again, it depends completely on the educational institution itself. There are a lot of schools throughout Latin America that I know of and throughout the rest of the world that have accreditation sharing arrangements with universities and colleges back in the United States. So some people will move their families to a place specifically to allow their child to study in a partner institution of the place that they eventually want to go to college when they move back to the United States. But again, it depends completely on the institution itself. We know a lot of people out here who are simply homeschooling. Some very good friends of ours here in Cotacachi are raising a bunch of the brightest kids I've ever run across just by homeschooling them. What they'll have to do if and when they go back to the United States to get back into school, I don't know. I have a feeling it would depend on the particular institution.
All right. Someone else here is asking about, they've got two questions. The first one is, can you open your own business in another country? So you get to Ecuador and you decide, hey, there's a little niche opportunity here for me to do whatever on a street front to open a business. And then they ask, secondly, if not opening a business, could you find a job before you move? Is there a way to use the internet to sort of find a job before you move? So they're asking about opening a business or finding a job. Maybe some thoughts on both of those.
Yeah, you can absolutely open a business. Your first and primary task will be to get local competent legal help and an accountant to make sure you're absolutely compliant with local business and tax laws, because they do exist here and you'll have to be compliant with those. But we know people who are running restaurants, bed and breakfasts, art shops, bookstores, you name it. There are a few jobs in some countries that are reserved for locals. A lot of the business in the tourism industry or the transportation industry will prefer locals before they will allow expats to compete in that market. So you need to know that as well. I'm sorry, Jim, the second half of the question. Finding a job before you move.
Right.
That's what the bulletin boards are so helpful on. I know there's an Ecuador expats bulletin board. There's a Cotacachi Ecuador bulletin board. There's a Cuenca bulletin board. They're in Panama. They're in Belize. They're in every place that expats settle in Mexico. Talk to the people who are on the ground. Some of them have already done this stuff, and they'll know where the job opportunities are. The main thing I want to get across, though, is that whatever you decide to do, be compliant legally and tax-wise in the location that you go. What those requirements will be will depend completely on the country and the location, but make sure you get hep to that.
For those just tuning in, my guest is Dan Prescher. He's joining me tonight live from Ecuador. He is with internationalliving.com, and we're taking questions by email or phone. If you're listening, you'd like to call in, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316. This will be your last chance to call, and we continue on with the email questions. The next question here is regarding visas and immigration laws, and they want to know, you know, how much money does it cost to get approved to be able to live in one of these countries? I know it's going to vary, but maybe we can give them some
sure.
sort of a...
In most cases that I know of, the total for applying for and receiving a visa, the entire process ranges from about $900 to $2,500. And it depends on if you want to try to do it yourself or if you want to have a local legal resource help you and walk you through it. I'm not smart enough to do my own visa work or my own taxes, so I try to get a qualified professional to help me with that stuff. I would put away maybe $2,000, $2,500 before I get involved in the process, and if it's less than that, that's icing on the cake. But it's the same the world over. It's bureaucracy, and bureaucracy can cost money, especially if you get legal advice to get through it. So I'd say $1,000 to $2,500.
All right. Now, this question is, it's a question that I actually have, so I'm going to sort of take their question and modify it a little bit. They are a teacher, and my wife is also a teacher, and they're looking at possibly wanting to spend summers overseas or abroad. I use the phrase overseas, bad phrase, because a lot of people in Central America, Mexico, all that, and that's not overseas. But they're looking to just do this in the summers. And I was looking at this myself because, for example, you know, if you go into an area as a tourist, you might pay $200 a night, you know, to stay at a like a touristy hotel or even a condo rental. Whereas if you look a little bit further, you might be able to stay like for the whole month for what you might have spent for just that 1 week, or maybe even stay for 6 or 8 weeks if you just stayed in like a normal residential area. So the question is, first of all, they want to know, is this a good way to sort of try it before you buy it? If you want to try an area out for maybe a month or two, is that practical to do that? And how the second question they're asking is, how can you do it for such a short window without paying like the high tourist rates for only being there for, let's say, a month or two?
Well, that's a good question, and we recommend that before you seriously decide to settle anywhere, you try it as long as you can before you buy it and actually make the commitment, because there's a big difference between being a tourist in an area and having a great time for a couple of weeks and actually having to open a bank account or get your phone hooked up or find out where to shop. So the longer you can stay, the better off you are, and the more you'll know about that area and whether or not it's right for you. The bulletin boards are extremely helpful in that. Every day I see people asking people on the bulletin boards, I'm going to be there next month. I'm going to stay from this date to that date. My budget is $350 to $450 a month. Do you know of any place available? The Internet just puts all of that at your fingertips. As far as teaching goes, almost every school in Latin America I know of loves to have native English speakers teaching their kids. The caveat is that often you need to be certified by the local educational board to do that. And the other caveat is that you will get paid local wages, which coming from the United States can seem remarkably low. So you won't be putting thousands of dollars a month away with a teaching gig in Ecuador or in Panama or in parts of Mexico. But if you want to contribute to the community, if it's something that you're good at, if it fulfills a need for you to help out the local people, and you want to make a little money, it's perfectly possible to do that.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, Dan. It's been fascinating. I want you to take our last couple of minutes and help us to understand internationalliving.com. You've mentioned the bulletin boards. Is some of this free, and then there's a subscription? Tell us how all that works and how people might go about getting more connected with your publication.
The easiest way to do it is, as you say, go to internationalliving.com, poke around the website. It's vast and deep with information. We have a free daily postcard that you can subscribe to, and that lands in your email box every morning. And it's a story from one of our correspondents living somewhere around the world or deals with a visa issue or a financial issue. The magazine itself is always on special. You know how the publishing business works. We try to get as many people to read the magazine as possible because that's where we put the meat of our information. And that can come to you once a month in your mailbox, or you can get it on PDF on the website. There are just so many ways to provide information nowadays that we try to cover all the bases. Most of it is absolutely free. And when you dial down into it and start getting serious about a specific spot, there are special reports you can buy. There are country owners' manuals you can buy. It's all there for you. But the website is the greatest place to start because it explains it all, and it's all spread out there for you at internationalliving.com.
And people can find you in other places, too, if you type in his name, Pressure, P-R-E-S-C-H-E-R, Dan Pressure. I know you're writing some stuff over at Huffington Post as well. I saw something over
there.
That's
right. We started blogging for the HuffPost 50 website, and have been having a great time doing that. AARP picks up some of our stuff. It's a concept that, like you say, is no longer strange or foreign to people. It's becoming more and more accepted by mainstream media. The buzz is out there about this option. HuffPost, New York Times, MSNBC, Fox, they're all kind of picking up on the story. So it's, the word is getting around, yeah.
And before we let you go, tell me what time it is right now where you are.
It is the same time as it is where you are. I have 21:59.
We're on
Eastern time, but we don't change for daylight savings, so we'll lose you sooner or later.
Okay, fair enough. I thought maybe it was especially late at night or something exotic like that, and you were doing this just for us to get up in the middle of the night. But we still are really happy to have you, Dan. Great information. We really appreciate it, and we'll have you back from time to time to update us on this whole idea. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
All right, sir. What a great interview, and what a great guy. What a nice guy. You could just tell from the sound of his voice, real friendly man, and very, very fascinating information. And I know my wife is listening. She's very interested in this, and I hope this has helped a lot of you who are looking at the possibility of living abroad, expatriating, as it's called, the big official term. Hey, have a great Christmas, a great New Year. We'll be back with a fresh show. We'll do two replays the next 2 weeks, and then we'll be back the first Sunday night of the new year with a brand new show for you and a great new year coming ahead. Can you believe it's going to be 2014? This is Jim Paris here, as always, to help you make the most of God's money. We'll talk to you next time in the new year.
You've been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit ChristianMoney.com or send an email to jim@ChristianMoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.